Good morning. My name is Michelle Kuhn, and I'm the track coordinator for the child track. And our goal this morning is really just to share a little bit more about what being on the child track will be like and what you guys will be up to over the year if you do end up matching with us. As Ty was saying this morning, we are pretty, what was he saying? We are pretty cash. We're pretty chill. We have chill vibes here in Seattle. And I come from the Midwest as Ty does as well. So in my family home, if you do not interrupt, you don't get to talk. So if you have any questions, please feel free to like raise your virtual hand. I can't see everyone, so it will need to be a virtual hand, or feel free to unmute yourself and ask questions as we go through. This is really meant to be a discussion, as all day is. All your interviews should also just be discussions where you can ask questions, find out if this is going to be a good fit for you and is going to continue to further your training. That's our goal today, is really for you to be able to get a sense of what this year would look like for you and whether it's a good next step for your training. That being said, here is our agenda this morning. So we'll give you an overview. You're going to get to meet our division chief as well as all of our rotation directors here. So Dr. Lolly, you want to give a wave? And then Connor and Cinta are also here, but I think, I don't know if they're here yet. Cinta, thanks for waving. And I don't think I see Connor yet, but Connor will jump on a little bit later as we get towards talking about the inpatient rotation. We're going to leave like 20 minutes at the end for additional questions and answers if you guys have them. And then I will do an overview of the rest of your day today. So with that being said, we have a variety of tracks here at University of Washington, and I am the child track coordinator. My name is Michelle Kuhn, pronouns she, her, and I have been in this role now. Last year was my first year, but before that, I had Jamie's role as the outpatient coordinator. And then moved into this role about a year ago. So I've been with the program for a while. I didn't do my internship here. I was steadfast in community mental health and then realized that there needed to be some additional research to feel like I could serve my clinical population in the community mental health setting. And so I came, thankfully, to University of Washington. I absolutely love it here, and now get to still be part of training, because that was always one of my first loves, was supervision and honestly learning from students as well. So so glad I get to keep doing that. So I'm going to give you just a little bit of an overview of Seattle Children's specifically, which is where all of you would be on a child track rotation. Ty was talking a little bit more about the broader University of Washington environment, but I want you guys to also have a good sense of what Seattle Children's specifically looks like. As Ty was and Katie were showing you this morning, Seattle Children's, we have two locations. The main hospital is here, and Seattle Children's Magnuson, where I am right now, is right down the road. All your CL and PBMU or inpatient experiences, both PBMU being our inpatient psychiatric residential setting, as well as consultation liaison CL being our pediatric consultation and liaison program, are both at the main hospital. And then all of your outpatient work would be here at Seattle Children's Magnuson. And between those settings, as well as the other Seattle Children's environments that you wouldn't rotate through, we see a lot of Medicaid managed care organization patients, but also about an even split between Medicaid and commercial insurers. Many of the clinics that we serve have that mix. Some of the clinics that you're rotating through are more majority served by Medicaid. And I encourage you all to talk to the folks that you're interviewing with today, as well as Jamie, about outpatient clinics. And if you have specific patient populations you're interested in, please talk about those in your interviews today and inquire about what your year would look like with those areas of interest that you bring. We also, Seattle is, as far as diversity, a majority white city. And our hospital is always working on increasing the diversity of the population we serve. But both of our clinical locations are not geographically accessible for the majority of folks who live in Seattle who are served by Medicaid. And so that is something I just want to acknowledge, that the hospital is located in a location that makes it much harder for a lot of the folks that we're dedicated to serving to just get to us physically. Telehealth has been helpful for that. And we'll talk a little bit later about the mix between telehealth and in-person appointments for your training year. And as you can see here, we see a lot of patients in psychiatry and behavioral medicine. And so we make up a lot of what this hospital does. And I think that's pretty cool and lends to what all of us really like about working here, right? The hospital really acknowledges that mental health is health and that this is and needs to be a vital part of care for most patients who walk through the door. Okay, so what to expect on the child track? Training will be generalist, as Ty was talking about and Katie were talking about, right? This is a year where you kind of broaden, and it's your last opportunity really to see patient populations, work with patient populations, think about patient populations that weren't necessarily your area of focus within graduate school. So our goal is that you walk away from your residency year feeling like you at least know enough about most patient populations that you would know, generally speaking, best evidence-based practices and how to at least go get new evidence-based information if it's not a patient population that is really your core patient population. And we also want you to figure out where you want to go with your career. And so there will also be opportunities for specialization. So it really is that both and, hopefully, where you broaden your horizons, but also figure out where you want to spend your time and expertise for the rest of your career. And we do that across many different clinics and many different acuities as well as locations, because that's how you get your generalized training and you figure out what you're good at and what really speaks to you as a clinician. And as Ty was saying, we are an evidence-based, all of your supervisors will really prioritize evidence-based intervention, but also challenge who our evidence-based does not include, and challenge you to think about what are the shortcomings of our current evidence base, and how do we as researchers and clinicians work to fill those gaps while also acknowledging them when working with patients and families. So you should expect a lot out of this training year, but a lot of support while you're doing it as well. We really, really hope, I always tell residents when they come work with us, that our goal by the end of this year is that you feel like you as a psychologist, you know who you are as a psychologist, and know how you want to get to the next stage in your training. So you move around a lot. We have consultation liaison, our inpatient, which is called the PBMU here, the Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine Unit, our outpatient rotation, and you also have that protected time for research or the grant writing seminar that Ty was talking about. And so the way we do this, to simplify this a little bit further, because I know this is a lot of boxes. But two of our residents will start on outpatient. We ask you what your preference is, and most years you all, without talking to each other, magically to choose outpatient first and to choose inpatient first, and we're like, thanks for that. So the first two people will start on outpatient, two people will start in the hospital. And then of the two folks that start in the hospital, one will start on the inpatient PBMU unit, and then the other will start on CL. And so what that ends up looking like are for the folks that are in outpatient, your rotation is 6 months in outpatient without changing. And then for the folks that are on inpatient, there's a switch over at 3 months to the other inpatient experience. What our residents tell us is that that really gives you a lot of time in outpatient to kind of follow some cases, which is wonderful. And on the inpatient unit, 3 months does feel quick for both of those rotations, but gives you enough time to follow some folks that are in the PBMU, which Connor will talk about a little bit later as well. As I was saying, Seattle Children's Hospital, by our location and by historical and current policies, has a lot of work to do when it comes to equity and anti-racism. Something that makes me feel really good about working in this department is our department has done a lot of work to hold the hospital accountable in moving equity and anti-racism forward with specific asks, as well as things that our department have put together, like caucusing. That being said, Seattle Children's is steeped in cultural racism. And I would encourage you all to go on and Google some of the last 5 year, some of the things that have been going on over the last 5 to 10 years here, where the community has really asked the hospital to answer for some policies that were really problematic. For example, inequitable use of restraint on our psychiatry and behavioral medicine unit. And there have been many efforts to catch up to where we should have been when it comes to equity and anti-racism. I also want to say that Ty talked about many types of diversity, but our leadership and supervisors are disproportionately white on this track. We want to be upfront about that. We also commit to prioritize your training experiences, listen to you, and believe you. No matter who you feel comfortable bringing up issues to, if they happen over your training year, anyone who is in a supervisory or mentorship relationship is a person you could bring those concerns to and have a conversation about how you feel comfortable moving forward. And we want to provide opportunities to learn about how to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion throughout your training and your whole career. That really is a core element of our training and something that all of our faculty are dedicated to through all of our various patient populations and work. And our department especially continues to work towards anti-racism and representation and pushing the hospital to move in the right direction with meaningful steps, actionable steps. Currently, we are not required to have the COVID vaccine at Seattle Children's, and we are currently masking, except for patient interactions where we need to see facial expressions. For example, in our assessment clinic, we sometimes need to take off masks for an ADOS so that we can share affect and see facial expressions. So that masking guidance changes based on our broader transmission rates, et cetera, in the community. And we always let you know as soon as we do about any upcoming changes when it comes to COVID modifications. But we'll talk a little bit about Tela health as well, which is another big COVID change. So here is your program administration. So me, I am the internship child track coordinator. Dr. Lally is the practicum and postdoc training director. So if you have any questions about postdoc here, Jamie is a great person to talk to. And then we have Dave Hall, Del Harris, and Carrie Williams. Carrie is your contact today if you have any questions, and is helping us coordinate everything, who help keep our program running, and make sure that I'm staying on point as well. These are our current residents who you will have the chance to meet twice today. We have a drop-in session in the afternoon, and then, of course, we have our formal Q&A that will happen right after this. And their email addresses are here, and these slides will be posted. And if you have any questions for them, feel free to reach out. I'm sure they'll tell you that as well during the Q&A and drop-in. And here are your supervisors. So you will hear from all four of us today. But if you have any questions specifically about these various rotations, I would encourage you to either ask them here, or we are all available for reach out after open house if you have any questions as you're thinking about your ranking. And last but certainly not least for me, we really do prioritize research here. And we do that in a couple of ways. First, as Ty was saying, you do get 4 hours of dedicated research time per week. If you haven't finished your dissertation, many folks spend their time working on their dissertation, and that's wonderful. You will also have a research mentor here who is assigned based on who you have talked about either in your cover letter, or we will reach out again after match and ask who you're interested in working with. Things change. And usually we're able to get the person that you ask for first and foremost. And that is another great time to, or a great way to spend this time, is working on projects with that specific research mentor or with the support of your specific research mentor. We also have secured $2,500 in travel, conference registration, and training material funds, in addition to your salary. So many individuals use that money to buy books or sign up for an EBT training that they're interested in, or go to conferences and present things that they're working on with mentors. So with that, I am going to hand things over to our division chief to do it. Well, actually, let me pause for a quick question. Any questions, just overview of the entire track before I hand things over to our division chief? And we'll have lots of time at the end too. I'm just going to pull up the chat. Okay. It is early morning here on the West Coast, so after coffee kicks in, there may be more questions, and that's wonderful. Okay. I am going to hand things over to Ray then for just a brief welcome to the department.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, Michelle.
Hey, Ray.
Good morning. My name is Ray Shaw. I'm the Interim Division Head and Vice Chair of Child Psychiatry here at University of Washington. I'm also the Director of the Child Psychiatry Fellowship. And for Seattle Children's, I'm the Senior Medical Director of Mental Behavioral Health Services, where I oversee a very large service line of mental behavioral services of over 1,000 people. So we're really most pleased that you're applying to our psychology internship. It's a really amazing internship. I actually loved all the people. We have a really strong collaboration between psychiatry and psychology. In fact, actually, Cinta was actually my partner when I was a child psychiatry fellow. And then we sometimes joke around, we're really great working together as clinicians, but the two of us both have black clouds that where we have set all sorts of records in terms of census we have seen together, but because Cintia is so amazing, we're able to survive it. In fact, actually, some of the things that you will see on our consult service is how we track the census was actually developed by Cintia when both she and I were trainees over 20 years ago, because it was out of necessity. That's how we had to survive. We were seeing unprecedented volume of patients. And it's something that's really amazing, because you will find that at Seattle Children's, you will get a really unparalleled training that most other programs would not be able to offer you. We're definitely one of the top pediatric hospitals in the country. When you read U.S. News and World Report, we were again part of the honor row as one of the top 10. And in terms of volume of patients we have this unique catchment area for WME region, Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho. So you will see the most complicated cases. And for those of you who are planning to have a research career, it's a really great setup, and which is something that really drew me to University of Washington. I was thinking about where to go train. Unlike other institutions, I went to undergrad med school in Chicago and Northwestern. And while I was trying to do research, I have to fight University of Chicago, Rush, Loyola, UIC for research subjects. Whereas in Seattle, we dominate. So I would actually have all the research subjects I need from five-state region. And plus, we have a really large footprint with our faculty being present throughout the system. In Seattle Children's itself, we're actually in a process of very aggressive expansion. So currently, we have 41 beds on inpatient unit. My game plan is actually, the hospital has agreed, is actually under my leadership, we're planning to go to 100 beds within the next 10 years or so. So, and then we have already grown our child psychiatry fellowship. We have one of the largest child psychiatry training programs, and we're planning to do that with Michelle and of the core faculty to actually expand our child psychology training programs as well, including creating new postdocs and then creating more slots for internship. So it's a really great time for you to join us. And for those of you who are interested in outpatient, to give you a sense of how big our operation is, we're talking about about 60,000 visits per year between an outpatient psychiatry opera clinic and the autism center. So that should up. So if you're interested in any type of patient that's an outpatient, you can bet it's pretty easy for you to have that. Inpatient side, the hospital currently has about 400 beds. We're talking about going to 600. So if you just do the simple math, let's assume 10% of the patients are presenting with some sort of psychiatric issues. That's easily 60 patients that you can choose to learn from on a daily basis on the consult service. So it's a really unparalleled training program, and with really amazing faculty that we're just hoping to add. So that's the other plug I want to put in. We're one of a few divisions in the country that's really in a growth mode. So I already added 14 faculty since the beginning of this academic year. Just think about that. We're only halfway through. In 7 months, I'm in the process of adding 14 new faculty. We're actually online to add 3 more as we speak. So we're probably going to approach about adding 20 new faculty in one academic year, because we're really in the process of actually wanting to figure out this is what we're hoping to do at Seattle Children's. We have a really amazing strategic plan that the hospital has laid out. And the good thing is actually the hospital really values mental behavioral health services. So when they decide to select the focus areas, psychiatry selected one for 4 focus areas. That's meant that we have actually doubled our inpatient unit previously from 20 beds to the current 41, and we're going to go to 100. And for outpatient operations, we actually got over $40 million in philanthropy from community to actually to combine our outpatient psychiatry and autism center. So Michelle probably showed you the beautiful picture of our Magnuson campus, and now we're actually talking about building a brand new building where we would actually have the entire building. So similar to the setup we have for University of Washington. So I'm looking forward to hopefully to get to work with a lot of you because we really value the amazing psychologists we have in our division, in our department, and we'd love to add you to our UW family. Any questions?
Thank you so much, Dr. Chow. I am really glad that you guys got to hear just about how prevalent psychology and psychiatry are at the hospital. It is a place where I really feel valued. I've worked at other hospitals doing CL, et cetera, where there's just a few psychologists rotating around. It does not feel like we are few here, especially as you were saying, right here, physically at the Magnuson location. It's really cool to be in a place where you can walk down the hallway and talk to an expert in OCD, or walk down the hallway and talk to the disruptive behavior IOP team. That consultation is really cool. It looks like there's a question in the chat from Jackie. Jackie, do you want to unmute and ask, or otherwise I can go for it?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Good morning. I'm sure you can read it, but it's nice to meet you. I was just curious about if you'd run the statistics on how many folks you retain for outpatient services based on their inpatient care experiences here, because I'm sure it's phenomenal in the numbers, and I think that'd be really cool to hear about.
Yeah, so on average, if you think about the 41 beds, you typically about 5 to 10 patients end up becoming like outpatient due to the expertise we bring to the table. And so the beauty of Ashley, because again, we have a catchment area of 5 states, so we're even serving patients who are out of state. I actually personally have patients who drive 6 hours to come see me because I am the regional expert when it comes to adolescent substance use disorders. And so that's the kind of a volume we have. So with the advance of technology, we're able to keep more. And sometimes it's actually, they're already pre-established patients. So I would assume about a quarter of the patients are probably Seattle Children's patients. So it's, like I said, it's really amazing the volume that we have. And then the other part I mentioned is, for the sake of time, we're also actually growing regionally too. So we're actually in a, because something I personally really believe in, for those of you who are really into equity, diversity, inclusion, issues. I have actually been the medical director for Asian Counseling Referral Services, which is the largest commitment health agency for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in the state of Washington for the past 14 years. It's something that's really dear to my heart. I actually do research in Taiwan, and my work has been good enough to be actually honored by the president of Taiwan. So we're really into EDI and audio related issues of serving our community. So we have now one of our top expansion plan now is actually we're about to double our clinic at the South Clinic in Federal Way, where the focus is actually on serving our Spanish-speaking only patient through our Calma clinic. And then now we're talking about expanding our operation in North Seattle, and now we're looking into Eastern Washington. In fact, I'm in the process of hiring a new psychiatrist who actually lives in Spokane, Washington, because we're hoping to actually add our presence there. And we're also talking about adding more presence in the local area in Bellevue, Redmond area. And so it's a really great time for you to be coming to join our department. And now we're also working with some of the Indian Health Services tribes in terms of expanding presence there. And then we also have a state hospital that we're expanding operations at, along with a correctional system. So in addition to Seattle Children's, if you read all the stuff we have on our website, you'll see our presence is even bigger than what you might know just simply through Seattle Children's.
Thank you. I can also add from the inpatient side that sometimes the appropriate next step isn't actually at Seattle Children's, despite our very robust services, because we are seeing kids from this whammy region of 5 different states. Like, we recently had a child on the inpatient unit who had come from Alaska. It wouldn't make sense to keep her outpatient care here in Seattle, and so our teams helped set her up with someone in Alaska in her home community. So when it makes sense, we do everything we can to try to keep them in our system, but sometimes it's actually more equitable and save some of those outpatient slots for families who need them and couldn't get a private pay service in the community. So we really try to think really carefully about how we're using our outpatient resources at Seattle Children's, because on the inpatient side on our PBMU, we see hundreds of kids, so more than our outpatient teams have capacity to see. And so we try to think really thoughtfully about that as well.
Thank you to you both. And Dr. Shao is going to hop off a little bit, but if you have any questions specifically for Dr. Shao, and you want to email them to me, we can also loop him back in if need be.
Very nice meeting you, and hope to see a few of you next year here on campus. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. So Jackie, that was a really good question. I want to add on to what Dr. Gallag was saying as well about just the transition from inpatient to outpatient. So from an evaluation standpoint, there are also some folks that get seen on the PBMU, and a psychological evaluation is either ordered or started there. And there is a nice crosswalk with the evaluation service that you guys will be working on if you match here, the PBMU team often starts an evaluation. It's called the SNACS Clinic. And then does the evaluation while the individual is on the inpatient unit, which is huge, especially for those geographically rural folks. And then we see them for telehealth follow-up consult visits to get connected to care and do some psychoeducation and directed consultation. So there are some things like that where I think the hospital is getting a little bit, we're figuring out how we can kind of bridge the stepped care, if you will, right? And kind of hold families as they move between. But certainly an area where we're growing, and I think the field has a lot of growth to do too. So excellent question and research area, Jackie. Great. Well, I'm going to hand things over to Jamie to talk a little bit more about our outpatient rotation. So I'll pull up the slides here, Jamie.
Thanks. Yeah, we can talk a lot about step-based care and all the different emergency outpatient services that have been developed to keep people out of the PBMU. But let's, we'll talk about outpatient. All right, so outpatient is my jam. So I would say I did miss Ty's presentation, but where I would agree, Michelle, that Seattle is a very relaxed place. I'm actually grew up on the East Coast, so no sneakers going into restaurants. You had to wear like no open-toed shoes. So, but what I would say is, Seattle Children's Hospital, the outpatient rotation is a wonderful mixture of different experiences here. If we keep going. So over the course of outpatient, it's going to be 6 months long. It will be generally from 9 to 5. Honestly, sometimes it's a little bit, what we try to do is we try to make sure that you get only 40 hours. So we try to stay within that. But sometimes it might be 10 to 6 or a little bit later, because sometimes we do have groups that run in the evening. For example, our DBT group starts at 5:30. But what we do try to do is have approximately 14 hours of direct clinical care per week. And it's really a mixture of telehealth and in-person. For your psychotherapy cases, we really do try to prioritize in-person experiences. And that being said, we do see folks throughout the state, throughout a very large catchment area, and for some folks, traveling to our Magnuson Clinic is just not feasible. So, here are some of the folks who you may work with over the course of your outpatient rotation. Just to go through some folks, so Michelle is going to be your primary supervisor when it comes to assessment. Brent does a lot of wonderful works in the early childhood clinic. Cindy Trevino, is our head of our CALMA clinic, which serves folks of Latino descent in the southern King County area. Dr. Kirill Gertovenko is our head of our DBT team here. Dr. Matt Goldenberg is the gender clinic, head of our gender clinic, which is a wonderful program here. Dr. Erin Gonzalez, she does a lot with behavior and attention management, other kiddos with disruptive issues, parenting management training. Elizabeth and Cinta also both work on consultation liaison. And since it works also as well as in the eating disorder, and she'll talk a little bit about CL today. And then Dr. Venkatrama and myself are in the mood and anxiety program. I'm also in a bunch of other programs, so I also work in the crisis care clinic. So we work with folks who just have had a suicidal crisis and sort of try to get them connected to care and offer treatment that is suicide specific. And then, as Michelle mentioned, I'm involved in a lot of coordination with the practicum postdocs and then also the psychiatry fellow anxiety rotation. So questions about training, if it's practicum postdoc, I'm happy to answer them. So what do? We do a lot of therapy. As you probably saw from the numbers, we have a lot of therapy sessions. And what we really try to do is, in this elective, is give you a broad experience. One of the things some of you might love outpatient therapy, some of you it might not be your jam, and like Michelle said, what we want to do is help give you a good, well-rounded experience so we can help you figure out, you know, what is the thing that you want to pursue in your career and give you experience so that you can make that kind of decision. So we're going to be working on encouraging you to do different electives. There's going to be evaluations, and there's also going to be lots of supervision, so lots of working with faculty or attendings. So our training cases come from waitlist or from referrals. In terms of electives, so when you're part of our outpatient rotation, we are in the beginning going to ask you to think about where you want to get some specialty training in. For some folks, they select like a major rotation, which is basically in addition to all your therapy cases, where do you want to spend your other time in outpatient clinic? And that's generally our DBT program is the other program that's a major rotation. It takes a lot of, there's a lot of meetings, there's a lot of groups, there's just a lot of didactics to learn. And so it does take up a big chunk of time. Otherwise, you can select to have two minor rotations, and those other rotations can be in our mood and anxiety program, behavior and attention management, I'm trying not to use acronyms, and CALMA, early childhood, or the gender clinic. So you do have some choice in where you want to kind of specialize or get some specialized experience. So as others have said, we do see folks through a mixture of telehealth and in-person. For trainees, we really try to prioritize some in-person. I know in many ways the field is kind of going in the telehealth direction, but legislation is going in the opposite direction, which is sort of maybe requiring Medicaid and other folks to be seen in person. And so we really want to make sure that you get a good, well-rounded experience, a mixture of in-person and telehealth experience. I would say almost all of our group therapies are currently over telehealth, except for two that would be open for you all, and that is our depression group pathway, so adolescents with depression and our DBT program. Supervisors tend to be part of the session just for a small bit, just until you kind of get your feet under you and sort of everyone feels like we're off to a good start. And I would say supervision can either occur over telehealth, but we try to do most of it in person if we can. You're good, Michelle. So I would say some testing is definitely in person. So if you're going to be doing the SNACS testing, that is definitely going to be in person. If you're going to be doing some diagnostic evaluations, then some of that might be over telehealth. So what do we do here? Evidence-based treatment is what we do. We have a lot of exposure and response prevention treatments. So for our anxiety disorders, our OCD disorders, lots of parent behavioral training. I would say CBT, behavioral activation and ACT, we use a lot for folks who are struggling with depression. DBT is a whole thing. If you do elect to have that rotation, we do coordinate with the University of Washington to attend a seminar that's 6 months long. and then family-based treatment for eating disorders, and lots and lots of trauma therapy. So if you're interested in trauma, we have lots of attendings who have experience with TFCBT, CBT, and even EMDR. So if you don't know what those are, don't worry about it. It's just trauma-focused therapy.
And Jamie, I'll just add one thing. So Ty mentioned this morning that residents don't take call, which is true, except if you elect to do a major DBT rotation, like the full DBT. And then because our DBT program is an evidence-based full DBT program, you will have the experience of having the after-hours phone, like all the other team members. So I just wanted to put that caveat, because I know that was something that's different specifically only if you elect into the full DBT experience. That's the only caveat.
Very true. And I think, so I used to be on the DBT team. The call has changed a little bit. It used to be that you were on call every day, and now what they do, I believe, is they have one person assigned to different days, and then it rotates so that you're not on call every single day. But it does rotate, and that is kind of part of what it means to provide evidence-based DBT therapy. So, and it does get you very good at teaching skills. A little bit more about evaluations. So Michelle is going to be your primary supervisor when it comes to the neurodevelopmental assessment and consultation services. There is 4 sessions. It is in person. It is primarily for kiddos with developmental behavioral concerns. And there is a lot of consultation and a lot of focus on writing up integrated reports that can be really used to help guide treatment. Michelle, anything else you want?
If you have more questions about that part, feel free to let me know. But we do serve a specialty population, kids with early adversity and prenatal substance exposure. So all children that come to see us have complex developmental trauma, high adverse childhood experiences, and or prenatal substance exposures. And so our clinic focuses a lot on the bounds of evidence-based practice, as well as a neurodiversity forward approach and trauma-informed approach to assessment and consultation. And we're a therapeutic assessment service, which is a little different for most folks that rotate through us, where we really make sure that we are using assessment to answer questions that a child and family have about themselves and about the child's brain and how it works and how it needs to be supported. So I also think our clinic is pretty fun.
It's very, you guys, I always hear that you guys have a lot of fun. So, that's good. Psychological evaluations, we also work with trainees to help prove their skill around doing a full diagnostic evaluations. So I feel very lucky here. Like when I was trained, we had like an hour to do a full assessment and give feedback. Here you have an hour and a half to do assessment, and then you have a whole other appointment to give feedback. And so we're really kind of working with y'all to train y'all to how to do full comprehensive psychological, psychiatric assessment evaluation, and then also to kind of write it up in a very effective way, and then finally to give feedback to a family, which is also a skill, is how do you communicate the results and develop a treatment plan. And we do that in various different programs. Oh, I see a question. Yeah, go for it.
Thank you. I just noticed that there is a difference between the number of sessions between SNACs and psychological evaluations, so I was wondering what each session entailed.
Michelle, do you want to talk about
that? Yeah, I can go through it real quick for SNACs. So first session for SNACs is intake interview. We don't often get all the information there, but we do our best. And then second session is in person, and we do testing. Third and fourth sessions are feedback. So we break up feedback into two 90-minute sessions. The first session is talking about the child's developmental profile. Sometimes we don't even talk about diagnosis. We're just talking about strengths and weaknesses. And then the second feedback session, we will definitely talk about diagnosis and then talk about interventions. And then oftentimes we have additional sessions where we're advocating for the child at a school meeting, talking about how to talk to a child about their diagnosis or exposure or trauma history. So it's a lot more therapeutic. There's a lot more holding of the family, whereas for the psychological evaluations, oftentimes you're the psychologist providing diagnostic input on a case that someone else is holding therapeutically, but that's really tricky and needs a psychologist's eyes for diagnostic differentiation.
Absolutely. So I would say we get a lot of cases where folks maybe have a provider or they're being referred by the school. What we try to do is kind of identify the presenting concern. We go through full anxiety disorders, OCD, depression, behavioral concerns, and then sort of psychosocial history. We kind of pull the whole thing together. So it's a quick, I think it's a really good skill, because whatever you do, it's a good way to kind of figure out, okay, how do I steer a session with different personalities and gather enough information and collaboratively come up with a plan, as well as respond to patients in a way where they feel connected, heard. It's different, but it's similar. Supervision.
Jamie, I'm also noticing our time, and I'm wondering, because I know you have to jet at 10, I'm wondering maybe if we can open things up for questions. I'm happy to take the rest of your slide, but you are a valuable resource. So if anyone else has any questions about what you've heard so far or what you read about the outpatient rotation for Jamie, now would be the time.
Yeah, go for it.
I was wondering, so I saw for the kind of more behavioral clinic that PCIT is one of the modalities used. Is that something that you provide training in, or is it only if you like come in with the training that that's a therapy you provide?
Michelle, do you want to answer that, or do you want me to answer that?
Yeah, happy to. Why don't I take that after you hop off? Elizabeth, what is your question? I'm going to make some notes here.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could speak briefly about the rotations within outpatients. So you mentioned a few: mood and anxiety, gender clinic, eating disorders. Are these all options? Like, can we do multiple? And how do we get placed into our preferences if possible?
Thank you. It's a great question. So what tends to happen is before you begin your outpatient rotation, what we do is we kind of I usually will have a little small meeting with you. We'll talk a little bit about what your interests are. And what we'll try to do is build a schedule with, usually it's about two rotations, sometimes three. But what we try to do is give you an experience in those areas that you want to focus on. So, for example, can you do a group on selective mutism, on anxiety and OCD? And if you're also interested in depression, we have a depression group. And if you want to do a parent behavioral training, we can go through the behavior and attention management program. So what we try to do is have a nice mixture of groups and individual therapy sessions that are specific to each subclinic. And you can usually select, I think we usually do two, Michelle. I don't think we've done three, but usually about two. And then you also have psychotherapy cases that are kind of independent of those other rotations. Does that answer your question? Yeah, okay.
Jamie, are you good on time? I just want to...
Yeah, it's okay. I have one of those diagnostic evaluations today. At 10 o'clock, that's why I got to run. But I can take another two questions.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Nicholas, do you want to go?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So it sounds like the DBT major rotation is kind of like that full model approach. It sounds like there's also opportunities if one wanted to get some experience, maybe not full model with something like DBT or other third wave approaches throughout the outpatient program. Is that accurate?
Michelle, I think it's a tricky one because the DBT really does, if you want to sort of like have a larger therapy role within DBT, it is going to take more time. But if you want to sort of, I don't think Dr. Kuro would sort of be upset with you sort of attending team meeting or consult meeting, but sort of like taking on a larger role would mean that you'd probably have to take on more hours within that subspecialty.
Well, and Connor, you might be able to speak to this when you're going over your slides too, but DBT is also integrated into the PBMU, and there also is a parent skills group. So I would say dabbling is certainly possible without doing like the full model. It may be on outpatient, it may also be on inpatient.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have time? Go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was wondering, since like I saw that you're getting referrals from schools and outside communities during outpatient clinic or rotation, I was wondering like how often we get to interact with like schools, communities, and what the interactions it look like.
So, it's a great question. Really, it is dependent on each case. So, we have a psychology resident who you'll meet a little bit later today, who actually has had quite a bit of communication with the school counselors, who has been helping to advocate for getting an IEP or 504, who's provided services in Mandarin and has been helping the family kind of navigate differences between the school board's sort of perspective and the mom, the parent's perspective. And so it really does depend on each case as to how involved you are. So I would say like I'm constantly involved with writing letters to schools, talking to school counselors, kind of providing that kind of wraparound services so that we can help the kid maybe transition back to school, get them to start going more to school. But I would say it depends, but there is definitely a lot of opportunity to interact with other providers in the community and other institutions.
Okay. Thank you for your extra time, Jamie. I'm going to send you off to your family, but if you have any questions, feel free when you email me, if they are for Jamie, just let me know and we'll loop in Jamie and get an answer to those after today as well too.
Well, welcome everyone and super excited to meet you and super excited that you're thinking about joining us here.
Thanks,
bye everyone.
So I will circle back to that PCIT question. So that extra research/training fund that you guys have, two previous trainees have used some of that money to get PC care training. And that being said, I don't want to guarantee that we can do true to fidelity, like bug in the ear PCIT. We have the facility for it, but supervisor availability, it depends. So are there folks here that know PCIT? Yes. And that are trained in it? Yes. Can I guarantee that you'll be able to be trained to fidelity through our training program? No. But if you rotate through early childhood, that's certainly something that many folks there have experience with. And I love PCIT. Yeah, Grace.
Thank you. I just had a question about the balance of like assessment to therapy experience in the outpatient rotation. Like,
yeah.
How many assessments are people doing?
Great question.
How are we deciding if we're in snacks versus doing more psychological evaluations?
Great question. So everyone will be in snacks. You're in your outpatient rotation every Friday is snacks. That's a team assessment model where you'll kind of be the co-leader with a practicum student that has Usually our practicum students have significant expertise in neurodevelopment. So if that's not an area you feel is strong in, that's totally fine. We all learn from each other. And then the psychological evaluations will be Monday through Friday. And those are a little bit more tailored to areas that you're interested in learning to be a little bit more, hone your skills in diagnostic differentiation. So SNACS, you see who is on your schedule, and the psychological evaluations, we'll work with Jamie to learn a little bit more about some more outpatient diagnostic differentiation. Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to move through the next, the last of Jamie's slides so that we can hand things over and talk a little bit about PBMU and CL. But we'll have some more time at the end for questions as well. These are really good. So supervision, as Ty was saying, you're going to get lots of supervision. You'll get an hour of assessment, an hour of therapy, an hour from your elective supervisors, as well as group supervision. So you'll let us know if you're supervised out. And then in SNACS, you will also get to supervise our practicum students. And that will be a little bit more focused on career development as well as their professional development. And that has been a really cool experience. I've heard amazing feedback from both the practicum students who are like, don't change rotations. I really like working with you. And from our residents. So you can see here our patients, as Dr. Shaw was saying, are very wide ranging. We see pretty much everything. We do work in multidisciplinary outpatient teams, and we encourage you to broaden that team to include community providers. Warm handoffs are our jam. Care coordination only makes services better. And you get to work with a lot of different types of trainees as well. And we really encourage you to learn from their learning as well. So since we're running just a little bit behind and I want to make sure that there's time, I might have time for like one more question now, if anyone has one about outpatient rotation. Awesome. I love having questions as we go. Great. So I will hand things over to Connor then to talk a little bit more about the PBMU.
Hi, so I am Dr. Connor Gallick. I am the primary supervisor for our psychiatry and behavioral medicine unit, which is a mouthful. So I will be using acronyms. On the PBMU, we have actually four psychologists. We're very lucky. We probably have more than a lot of inpatient units around the country. But I am the attending for our adolescent program, and then we have another attending for our child program, another attending for our biobehavioral program, and a psychologist that is a clinical director for our whole unit, which is really awesome. So on the PBMU, we have 41 beds. And we serve patients mostly ages 4 to 17, again, in that whole whammy region. Our hospital is actually the only inpatient hospital in the state and sometimes within that whole region that serves children who have autism and kids under 12. So within Washington, there's no other psychiatric inpatient facility that will take a kid who is under 12 years old. So we really end up being a hub for folks from all over. We see about 1,200 patients a year, and in a very, very wild turn from outpatient, our average length of stay on our inpatient unit is about 7 to 10 days, sometimes less, sometimes more, if there's a difficult discharge or they have really, really severe illness, if they're waiting for catatonia or psychosis to clear or something like that, it might be longer, but on average, we only have them for less than 2 weeks, which really changes the approach that you take with them therapeutically and how you work with families and what your care looks like. We operate, like many of our clinics, in truly a multidisciplinary care team. So we have psychiatrists and advanced practice providers who help with medication management. All of the patients on the PBMU actually are assigned a master's level therapist, which is also a really unique thing about our setting. We have a higher therapist to patient ratio than any other inpatient unit in the country. And then we have psychologists. We also have nurses or staff who help support the patients all day, 24/7 on the unit, as well as case managers. And then we consult to other areas of the hospital. No, you're good. You're good. The next one's fine. So while you're with us on the PBMU, you have a few sort of primary duties, and what becomes really interesting and sometimes challenging for residents is, unlike outpatient rotations, there is no scheduled visits. So you're going to be doing a lot of fitting the expectations of what you need to do within a really flexible schedule. The patients are always there. You could go and see them anytime that you are there. And sometimes that can be really tempting to see them more, to spend a lot of time. And sometimes it can make it a little hard to organize your day. So being on our rotation really requires a little bit of being able to think about your schedule and really plan mindfully, because it is not pre-scheduled. You will be the primary therapist for two patients. We ramp it up. You start with one, and then we add two. We also, all of our patients get therapist-led psychoeducation and CBT and DBT-informed patient skills groups. So we ask our residents to do one group a day while they're with us. And then we also do something that I'm really proud of, that we've really expanded this service since I have started, that is pretty unique if you've ever worked in other inpatient settings. It doesn't happen a lot, that we do cognitive and diagnostic assessment services on our unit. So a lot of our patients, not necessarily in our outpatient clinics, but have tried to get outpatient services and can't because their illness is too severe, but to do an assessment. But if we don't have a thorough assessment, they end up in this crappy cycle of they really, really need more information and more recommendations, but the outpatient clinics won't see them because they've recently had a crisis. And so we are able to really disrupt that cycle. And I've literally had families cry that they are so happy that someone has finally been able to diagnose their child with an intellectual disability or autism or things like that. So that's a really powerful service that we provide, and you get to have that experience on inpatient. And what you'll find is that you have to be a lot more flexible with your diagnostic and cognitive testing when you are working on an inpatient unit, because sometimes that means you're testing on the floor or you're stuck in a room because the space is closed. So it becomes I think that our inpatient rotation is this place where you really get to flex a lot of your skills, because if you're only going to teach a skill in 20 minutes, you need to know it really well. You are going to get good at delivering really efficient services and being really, really flexible. You will also collaborate with me on our behavior intervention plans. You're good. So additionally, you will have daily supervision with a psychologist. So every single day you are on our unit, you have supervision with me. So we do that a little bit differently because of how quickly patients change, how quickly patients move, instead of having two 1 hour meetings, we do 4 30-minute meetings, so that every single day you're on our unit, you are getting supervision. Additionally, we have multidisciplinary rounds, which also are attended by a psychologist and several therapists that do count for supervision hours in group supervision. We do a weekly group supervision, and there are some opportunities for program development and things if you are really interested in creating a group. There's some options for that as well. So while you're here, we really, really hope to instill a really good appreciation for our multidisciplinary teams and give you that perspective, which will be beneficial to you in every stage of your career, no matter what you go on to do. Having that experience of coordinating with several different disciplines is really, really valuable. We'll also become familiar with the child welfare system, called CPS, DCYF, not necessarily just because of things like mandated reporting, but sometimes we have kids who are in DCYF custody. We have kids who are in juvenile justice settings, and so you will get some experience in sort of navigating those systems, which I think is really unique. You'll get to hear a lot about psychiatric medications and what that looks like, because attending rounds, you'll get to hear the provider talk through medications, why they chose what they did, what they're targeting, which I think is a really cool and neat perspective to have as a therapist. We'll work on documentation being concise, comprehensive, and succinct, especially because on inpatient, you have to do your notes before you leave. The providers the next day need to look at your notes before they start rounds. And so we don't get the luxury that sometimes you might on inpatient of waiting a day or two to do your notes. They really have to get done. And so we work on really helping you do that succinct and comprehensively. You'll get experience with really, really acute and severe mental illness that you won't be able to get outside of an inpatient setting. You will get to see firsthand what psychosis looks like, what catatonia looks like, what really severe mania looks like, and get to sort of see what that treatment looks like and how providers sort of approach that. You will get a lot of skills in crisis intervention and safety planning. Safety planning will be your jam. You will do so much safety planning while you are on the PPMU that you could hopefully do it in your sleep, as well as getting skills in really quickly and efficiently teaching emotion regulation, distress tolerance, and problem solving skills. Those are our really bread and butter things that we teach on the inpatient unit, right? If you're only getting a kid for 10 days, we're not doing CFCBP. We're not unpacking all of their trauma. We are not diving into like what their automatic core belief is that's leading to that. We don't have that kind of time. We're really focusing on how do I give them a skill that will help them manage this crisis and keep them in a place that when they go on to their outpatient services, they are open to continuing their mental health journey. And I also just really think that no matter what you're planning on doing in your career, having the experience of understanding and appreciating not only the strengths and the values and all the wonderful things that can happen on an inpatient unit, but also the limitations of what inpatient units can actually accomplish will set you up to be a much more well-rounded and skillful clinician.
Questions? Thanks, Dr. Gallick.
Yeah.
Any questions about the PBMU?
Elizabeth. Hi, thank you so much for all of that. I was wondering if residents are able to rotate on all three of the PBMU units that you mentioned, like child, adolescent, biobehavioral, or if it's concentrated on one.
So we mostly have our residents in the child and adolescent programs. Our biobehavioral program, it's not a closed off option, but generally the folks who are really interested in that are our autism track residents, because the biobehavioral program is for kids and adolescents with very severe autism and intellectual disabilities who are generally nonverbal or very, very limited in their verbal skills and are really getting an entirely different treatment that isn't group based, that's really ABA focused. So we'd certainly be open to talking about that with a resident, but it would, but generally we keep folks focusing on child and adolescent programs unless there's a really, really strong use case or training desire to sort of change how we are doing that. Sanjani?
Hi. Thanks for sharing all of that information. It was interesting to hear about the cognitive and diagnostic assessments that get conducted inpatient. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, is that something that's family initiated or is that something someone from the care team initiates mm-hmm. based on what they're observing or a combination, I imagine?
It's a great question. It's almost never family initiated in that we are not necessarily strongly advertising that we do this because we can't provide it to every single one of our patients. We just don't have enough folks for that. So generally it is a care team driven decision. So the doctor or the APP is concerned about a cognitive disability, or the diagnostic list. We get kids that have like 12 diagnoses in their history, and the team is like, can you help with this? So that, like, diagnostic wise, you will be doing diagnostic assessments for kids who have a long list of diagnoses, and they're very, very complex. And we will provide clarity in that regard. For cognitive testing, it's really generally driven by the provider being concerned, or that I have observed the kid, or one of my residents has observed the kid and has concerns. So we can do that as well.
Thank you.
Mary.
Thank you for your presentation. I was really curious, you mentioned that there are opportunities for program development, and that sounds really interesting to me. I'm wondering if you could share some examples of even just ways that students have sort of like implemented a new group or made sort of changes to the program.
Yeah, so the way that we sort of have our group set up aligns really well with giving you a chance to develop a new group that you want. So one, in our adolescent program, all of the kids get a skills group and a psychoeducation group. And the psychoeducation group has some content, but it is really meant for folks to kind of be able to have more freedom and flexibility. Our skills group content follows the schedule. So like last year, one of our residents was really, really interested in sleep and designed a whole psychoeducation group for the kids on sleep and sleep hygiene and better sleep. So you have this opportunity to build your own group if that's something that you really want. We've also had residents who wanted to help with things like parent groups and getting those started. So like that was like a new thing that we brought onto the unit.
Thank you.
Jackie?
Mary actually had my question, so thank you.
Great. Kara?
Oh, hi, thank you so much. This builds a little bit on the previous questions. I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about what the family involvement looks like, interacting with parents and bringing caregivers into the treatment.
Yeah, so we interact with families and caregivers as much as we possibly can. We actually set expectations in our initial call that we expect them to interact with us and expect them to visit us. And that happens pretty thoroughly with some exceptions for a variety of reasons. So you are gonna be spending a lot of time talking with parents. We have a lot of patients who are actually admitted to the hospital under something in Washington called family-initiated treatment, where the child is not there voluntarily, they're there because the family has been concerned. It varies a little bit to, you're gonna be spending most of your intervention time with a child patient with their parents, because evidence-based treatment for most of the things that are going on for kids on our unit, aggressive and disruptive behaviors, are with parents. With our adolescents, a lot of it is working with the adolescent and then helping the parent build a validation skill, doing some sessions with the parent and the teen to set some boundaries with a little bit of a moderated conversation, because they need that help and support. But you will absolutely be interacting and engaging with families while you are working with us, especially because you cannot make a safe plan for a child to discharge home without talking to their family.
Thank you.
Yep.
Else? Thank you. I was just curious how commonly you have patients with more of an extended stay on the unit just due to challenges with discharge planning, and also what resident involvement in discharge planning looks like more broadly.
Ooh, okay. That's a robust question. I'm going to try to answer succinctly, because we have been working really, really hard both within our hospital and pushing on state systems and doing a lot of legislative advocacy to reduce length of stays, because and increase the available outpatient and residential treatment support options. So we do everything we possibly can to have kids not stay with us longer. All of the data and the research on our unit shows that kids get a little bit better, and then after about 12 days, their behavior gets way worse. Inpatient units are not actually good long-term. We're just not set up to be supportive in that way. probably there's always at least one or two kids who are in what we call our step kids pathway or on our barriers to discharge list. We've gotten those barriers down and they've been out faster than they have previously, but there's always some, and some of it is a parent refuses to take their child home and there isn't any recourse for us in that regard because the hospital is safe, so DCYF doesn't believe that they should step in. So in that area we're stuck, or the child really needs residential treatment and none of the residential treatment facilities have accepted them, or we're waiting for our long-term residential treatment in the state, or it's a biobehavioral kid and we just need a lot more time with them. They're like, the stays are just higher. So we work really hard and there's always a few kids that are stuck.
I am so sorry, but I'm going to move us on to Dr. Flynn to talk about consultation liaison. But Nicholas, let's circle back to your question either at the end. Awesome. Okay, cool. Okay, Dr. Flynn, I will hand things over to you.
Well, welcome everyone. It's nice to see everyone here. I'm going to talk... quickly kind of give a presentation overview of the psychiatry psychology consult liaison service, which is one, it's a 3 month one of your potential inpatient rotations. Listed here are the core faculty, the medical director is Dr. Kodish, who is a psychiatrist. I'm the primary supervisor on the team, and then there's Eileen Tui and Elizabeth McCauley, who are both psychology attendings. All of us have been core faculty for some time. As Ray alluded, I was a psychology resident many years ago and got my start on CL way back then. What we do with... on the consult service is that we are consulted by medical teams who have patients on the medical floor who are primarily being there's a psychiatric or suspected psychiatric condition that is causing something that's getting them hospitalized. It could also be that there are psychosocial factors that are contributing to a medical condition, such as anxiety exacerbating something like Crohn's or KA with diabetes. You can have medical conditions that also are resulting in creating mental health symptoms such as becoming depressed, renal failure, and then we just have ones that are purely comorbid. There are children that have ADHD, cancer, but that the mental health concerns or symptoms associated with that are making it difficult to treat, and so the child or adolescent having difficulty participating in their care. And you also have psychiatric conditions such as eating disorder that results in bradycardia, which results in medical condition, or there are medical consequences of, for example, a suicide attempt. About 30% of our medical inpatients present with psychiatric conditions or symptoms that result in a consultation to us. We do have patients that are admitted, about 10% of our caseload has delirium, which we're often called them to differentiate between, say, something like catatonia or a substance creating that delirium. What we do know is that people with mental health conditions tend to be a higher user of medical care and that it can increase length of hospital stay, which even on the medical floor, we don't want kids being there any longer than they need to be. And before I start talking about this, I'm going to actually mention one thing that I could have mentioned. About a third of our consults and It varies from day to day, week to week, but over time, I think about a third are patients that we are seeing after they have made some attempt at serious self-harm. And about a third are patients who are admitted due to eating disorders and the medical consequences of that. And the other third is, I'm just going to lump them together, all those other things that I mentioned. And so that's kind of typical how it breaks down. So as consultants to inpatient medical teams, we provide a number of services. Very typically, we do assessment. These are sometimes, we're really doing a full psychiatric eval, and sometimes we're doing something more targeted. We're a very busy service on the consult team. It varies, but the last time I can remember not really having much to do, well, actually, I can't remember that. So, consult days tend to go by very quickly, and psychology residents are very much integrated into the service. You are often helping us triage and carrying the pager for the medical teams while you're also doing evaluations. We have a number of people who work with the kind of the core faculty that you see here. So you would be working with not just the MDs and PhD attendings, primarily with the psychology attending, but we really encourage you to do things with the psychiatrists as well, both the attendings and the fellows. But we also work, we're a multidisciplinary team. We have ARNPs, family advocate case managers who really help with our treatment recommendations, like making those happen. We have other trainees, pediatric residents and medical students, and a number of people from our behavior support team. So we're a much bigger group than that, than this slide might convey. And we round every morning together, and then of course you're working with the medical teams and often participating in multidisciplinary care conferences with social work and nutrition and adolescent medicine. And so lots of multidisciplinary work. I think maybe I would say that's our jam. And we also, you have an opportunity to provide some brief intervention. Typically, our patients are not on the medical floor for long periods of time. Sometimes, unfortunately, kids are in the hospital for a long time. We have a therapist, a regular therapist who works with us, but psychology residents also do this. And our treatment planning is sometimes a fluid work in progress. So we may have something on day one when we first see them, but then we're adapting along with how the patient is doing in the hospital. You get, you're basically always working with an attending, sometimes also with the fellows. So you spend a lot of time with the psychology attendings. There is at least 1 hour of supervision on your own with the attending who is on that week. The attendings rotate. And then I'm the primary supervisor, so we meet once a week for an hour, which tends to be more the how's the whole rotation going supervision hour, and the other supervision is more focused on the cases that you're seeing. And that being said, you're walking out to the medical floor together, you're like talking about cases pretty much all day long. So there's no shortage of supervision. And then in the rounds, you're meeting with everyone and we're talk about our cases, and you'll hear everybody's different rationale for what we're doing. Every day you have new consults. Again, can't think of a day when we didn't have one recently. And then there's follow-up. So in our rounds, we review all the cases, and then we kind of get our assignments and are often usually doing a combination of follow-ups and maybe brief interventions, care conferences, and new evaluations. The residents and the fellow, the psychiatry fellows alternate who's first call. So residents are, I was going to put this in air quotes, you carry the pager, technically it's, you're just the first page. So med teams page you first on Mondays, Wednesdays, and half of Friday, and the fellows take the other days. And you're always kind of triaging, trying to figure out who do we see next. And so we start off with a plan, and then we are communicating with the rest of the team throughout the day about what happened. Should we change things up? Is there something that's come up that's more urgent? And then we're going to like postpone something we were just about to do, and we're going to switch it to something else. That's very common. Just did that yesterday. Okay. And this is kind of the process. The medical teams will, they put in a consult so we can see it, and then they are asked to page us. And so if you are the first page, you'll get that page. They'll give you some clinical information. You're going to help them identify a reason for a referral. Sometimes they're not entirely sure what they want, and you will be the person who knows what we offer. And then you will make sure that the patient and the family has consented to have psychiatry come see them. And then you'll let the whole team know, and we'll decide what's the next step and who's going to go do that. If you're the person going to see them, you'll do the clinical interview. It includes a mental status exam always. You'll have contact with other providers who are providing care, which may include outpatient providers, inpatient service providers, the medical team, and we're always, with every child or adolescent we see, we're doing a risk assessment, even if that isn't the primary question. Then we will be doing an evaluation report, and like on the PBMU, these are required on the same day. Sometimes we are pausing in the middle of the day and getting those done so that we can move on to the next step to this patient by the end of the day. And that includes diagnosis and recommendations. And then we usually place a call to the medical team and give them feedback unless we're meeting them in person for their problems. For follow-ups, we do lots of safety and crisis prevention planning. So another opportunity to do that. Brief interventions, behavioral support, we will reassess multiple times and alter our recommendations. We do multidisciplinary rounds sometimes with the med teams, care conferences, and we will facilitate admission to the PBMU if that's what we think is the next step. And these are just a list of some common consultations. I mentioned kind of how they break down. But we do see a lot, we do a lot of risk and safety assessment and safety planning for patients who are hospitalized due to suicide, attempted self-harm. We do assessment and assistance for patients hospitalized with medical complications or secondary disorder. We have lots of patients and their families who are sometimes getting news about medical diagnoses that we can be there to be supportive in how they're going to adjust to that, manage that. We see a number of kids with SMSD. Any acute changes in mental status, which includes delirium and catatonia, often does get treated on the medical floor. There are patients with pain concerns for adherence to medical recommendations if required, medical hospitalization. And then we see a lot of those kids, and then just in addition, kids who have experienced trauma or abuse, they have some medical complication that may have resulted from that. These are oftentimes actually complex in terms of the psychosocial history, and disposition challenges. They can be from all over the region, as people have talked about, and we have some really wonderful case managers who help us figure that out. But you spend time working closely with them so that what you're recommending can get fulfilled. Opportunities for skill development, there's a whole bunch of them. And I know that we probably want to leave a little time for questions, and we're already probably running into your next activity. So I will just kind of let you read these, but basically you'll do a lot of assessment and differential diagnosis. We're oftentimes the first mental health providers that are seeing these patients. Treatment is not long-term, but we do some brief intervention, and you will be working closely with the psychiatrist on our team, so it really have a chance to increase knowledge of psychopharmacology, especially with complex medical and mental health, that kind of interface there. Experience like developing skills in this kind of setting, like brief intervention skills that are really targeting symptom management, lots of multidisciplinary collaboration. There is some opportunities for folks in terms of having like residents have at times helped develop like systems that work better on the consult service. All the fellows and the residents give didactics and often like bring to consults that information from the literature. And we do end up encountering a number of ethical and professional issues, which I think gives an opportunity to learn a lot about the state law and also some of the ethical dilemmas that come with treating patients that are acutely ill. And I'm going to stop there and open up questions.
Thank you so much, Cinta. I'm going to present just a couple of slides, and then we'll open up to broad questions, because I know our end time here is 10:45, and I just want to honor that for anyone that needs to pop off. But we will certainly stay here for questions as you head to your break. So I just briefly want to talk about postdoc, but as Dr. Lally was saying, he is also a great contact for this. I want to highlight this. Funding changes year to year, and postdoc is a stressful application process, period. But the unpredictability of postdoc funding and the fact that it's not one application process, not to say this isn't equally stressful in its own way, but the fact that there are so many different ways to get a postdoc, and they get posted at different times, and they may or may not, the one that was posted the year before may or may not exist this year, the person might be staying for a second year, is hard. And so I want to just be very upfront that we do have some postdocs. At Seattle Children's, we have 4 this year. But as you'll see here, there isn't a general child internship or postdoc for next year. And that's rough. That's not great. UW does have a lot of postdocs. There's T32s. And then you'll see here a couple of places or 4 places you can go to see the various postdocs that are available this year. And again, those change year to year. So I just want to be very upfront. We love our residents to stay. And we've had a really good track record for having residents find a good home for postdoc here after being here. And the landscape is tectonic. I just want to say that. And then I also want to give you guys a update on today's schedule. So you'll have a break from 1 minute ago until 11. And then from 11 to 12, you have your Q&A panel with the general child residents. And Ty sent this Zoom ID out to you guys. So that email that he sent is another place you can go for the Zoom ID. And then at 12:30, You guys, through 4:20, you'll have 3 individually scheduled interviews. If you have any questions or difficulty with those, call Carrie. She is your point person. And then from 1:50 to 3, as you're not in interviews, you will have the opportunity to drop in on our residents and some postdocs that are in a drop-in room. Ask them any questions. These are not recorded and are just time for you to ask them what it's really like. And then Dr. Twowey and myself, and actually Elizabeth McCauley, Dr. McCauley, will also all be in a wrap-up room that is also completely optional, just a drop-in. If you have any questions at the end of your day, we know that interviews sometimes bring up additional questions that your interviewers might be like, I don't know that, but you should definitely ask Michelle about that. That's your opportunity. If you can't make that time, no worries. Just shoot me an email. Would be happy to hear from you. Okay, so I'm going to open things up to questions and feel free to drop off. I really mean it. Leave. If you don't have questions, and again, do not send us a thank you note. You have done enough work. We know you're glad to. Well, we hope you're glad to be here. We're really glad you're here. And you have written enough. Like, you've written essays. You've written cover letters. You did it. So we really, 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 honestly, really mean that. Once you make it through today, you're good. Okay, we're here for questions.
I think Nick's question was about the PBMU. So I could...
Ah, that's so true. I wrote it down in front of me. Yeah, Nicholas, do you want to ask your question? Thank you.
Thanks. So it's actually kind of great that Dr. Flynn went too, because it has to do with eating disorders and my interest in expanding on my current experience in outpatient eating disorders, which it seems like in the CL that would give some breath. And Dr. Gallagher, I was wondering if there was any presentation of eating disorders in the inpatient unit, and maybe how the inpatient unit kind of connects to the eating disorders outpatient clinic at UW.
Yeah, so our inpatient unit doesn't have a super good connection to the outpatient UW clinic. And we essentially see the eating disorder kids that have a lot of other complex diagnostics in addition to the eating disorder. Those kids will end up on the PBMU. We mostly, on the PBMU, we do like eating disorder support. So we'll do meal support. We will make sure they're medically stabilized. Sometimes that means dropping an MG tube. But usually our role on the PBMU is really helping stabilize generally the suicidality or the aggressive behaviors that's keeping them from getting the robust eating disorder treatment that they need. So you will see patients with eating disorders. We don't do as much targeted eating disorder care because they generally need to stabilize a lot of other severe mental illness before they're able to go on to an outpatient or residential eating disorder facility.
I can add to that since you, I am, in addition to being a council attending, I'm also the director of our eating disorder recovery program here at Children's in Psychiatry. We have a strong collaboration with our adolescent medicine and nutrition partners. And a lot of what we do, we have technically outpatient services. We also offer a transition service, which helps patients who are leaving the medical school but don't have services available yet. We offer 1 month of services through our outpatient clinic to help support them. We have a meal support program. We offer services in both Spanish and English. There are residents do have the option of doing in their outpatient, if you have a strong interest in eating disorders, doing an eating disorder elective, which can involve seeing a certain number of patients yourself with That's one of the elective supervision things that Jamie mentioned. And also joining our EDRP, Disorder Recovery Program team, for our weekly consult huddle. We also have a didactic series that we do every week that residents are welcome to attend. And then I feel like unless something dramatically happened, I can absolutely guarantee that you will see patients with eating disorders on the consult service. It is sometimes, like, you know, our list varies from day to day, week to week, but there was one day, I think, in like, you know, like 5 years ago, we had no eating disorder patients on the medical floor. That is very unusual. Sometimes we only have one or two, sometimes we have more like 8 to 10. We've had up to 15, so it can be, and the consult service matches all that. So I feel like you could not get through a rotation without being really involved in their care. In our community, there are a number of more commercial facilities. There's a new facility that is a not-for-profit, takes Medicaid insurance. That's been an issue for years. But there's a new facility opening up to higher levels of care, intensive outpatient, PHP, residential. So we have pretty good coverage in our community for those things. Insurance can be an issue for some patients, so. So we're always building in our EDRP. Program development is one of the, also our jam. So, and we really enjoy, again, like kind of the multidisciplinary. So just adding that in about opportunities to work with patients with eating disorder.
Yeah, Clara. I think we'll take this last question, and then I'm going to enforce a 5-minute break.
I'm just curious, you mentioned, Dr. Kuhn, about opportunities to supervise with snacks like other practicum students. I was wondering if there are other options for supervising practicum students in the different rotations and electives.
Yeah. That's a good question. So certainly practicum students are a part of most of our clinics. And because we do evidence-based interventions that tend to be a little bit more time-limited, your interactions with practicum students in the various other clinics might be like co-leading a group with them, for example, which may last 12 or 16 weeks. And then that might be the end of your interaction with that specific practicum student. So you certainly will be working with practicum students, but what we were hearing from residents is before we instituted like the structured snacks supervision experience, they weren't working with the same practicum student week by week by week by week that was like their practicum student. Our goal is that you really get to talk to me as your supervisor about like your supervision style and like what your model is and what you need for your professional development as a supervisor. So yes, you will get tons of experience supervising practicum students, and that consistent, like you're their supervisor, is what snacks is a little bit more unique about.
Thank you.
Awesome. Okay. Well, take your break. We won't see you in the Q&A in 5 minutes, but that's where you will all be with our current residents. And then I will either see you again at the end of today or say thank you so much for being here and enjoy your interviews.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.